You like a game, it's great. Every board game is great.
Welcome to Breathing Flames, the tabletop gaming podcast from IslayTheDragon.com. I'm John, also known as Farmer Lenny on I Slay the Dragon, and today we'll be talking about what makes a game great. Some have said that we're living in a golden age of board games, and with that golden age has come a veritable deluge of new board game releases each year, all of which hope to find a place on game store and collection shelves, but most of which are destined to be consigned to the clearance bin and forgotten. Recent articles by designer Bruno Fiduti and David Talton of Level 99 Games, among others, have commented on this trend from their perspective as designers and publishers, but as board game reviewers, we often find ourselves in a difficult place. We love board games and love exploring new ones, but with so many releases each year, and gaming budgets being what they are, it is increasingly important for us to separate the wheat from the chaff, to recommend great games instead of the merely good. This got us thinking, what separates a good game from a great game? With me to explore this topic today are two fellow Dragon Slayers, Alex.
Hi there.
And Wolfie.
Hello.
All right, so welcome. And today, again, we're talking about what makes a game great. Alex, what are some characteristics that you think make a game great?
I think in this day and age, while it's probably not my first criteria that I look for, I do kind of set this minimum standard for production quality. With so many options available to us, it's really hard to settle for poor production quality now. You can have one good game that has poor production compared to another good game that has great production. You're just going to gravitate to the one that's better production. And when I mean production, I mean quality of cards, cardboard, art, graphic design, all the physical stuff that goes into it, I think should set at least the minimum threshold. And for a truly great game, in my opinion, really has to go above and beyond.
And Wolfie, what do you think makes a great game?
So I came up with three kind of broad topical list thingies that I think separate a great game from just a good game. And those three things are: number one, it should be memorable or immersive. Number two, it should be unique in some way. And number three, it should have a lot of replay value.
Those are good characteristics. I'm interested, Alex, that you put such a high premium on the production quality, mostly because when I got into the hobby, all of the games that I got had these ugly covers with frowning medieval lords on them.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite games when I first got into the hobby was El Grande, and I almost didn't pick it up for several months just because the cover was so ugly. And I guess over the years, I've learned to not value production quality so much. But it's interesting that you say just because there are so many options, the production quality matters so much.
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly the age of the brown. But things have certainly progressed since then. And first and foremost, you know, board games are a physical product. You know, you go to store and they're this physical thing that I'm going to store in my house. They're going to take up physical space. And I'm a visual person. I love photography. I love art. I love visual mediums. So if I'm going to put this physical thing in my house, I want it to at least have some visual grab, some draw, so that I can look at it and not be totally embarrassed. And like you said, now that we're in such an age of opulence, there's so much board games out there. It's a flood. Or it's pretty easy to find a good looking board game that also plays pretty great.
I sort of disagree with you, Alex. I think to a degree that...
That's not allowed.
Well, I'm making it allowed. Who invited this guy? Let's kick him out of here. Just kidding. I think the production quality is valuable, but I also think that production quality can disguise a lot of games that are not actually that great and that are not going to last very long.
Oh, certainly.
I think that production quality draws a lot of attention, and then the Kickstarter projects make $1 billion, and there's all these minis and great art, and then it just gets tired. I do agree that it's easier for a game with a good production quality to stand out, but I would not say that's required for a game to actually be great. I feel like that's a different quality.
I wouldn't put production quality anywhere, probably even in the top 10 of things that are important to me. Again, I grew up on the James Ernest cheap ass games. So Kill Dr. Lucky, that came in a box and you supplied all the components aside from the board and the cards. And those were pretty much printed on printer card stock. So, and again, a lot of the Rio Grande games that had these kind of dour looking medieval lords on the cover, that just isn't that important to me. I think the thing that matters most to me now, it has to have some kind of hook that makes it stand out. And I don't mean a gimmick, even though it kind of sounds like I mean a gimmick. So, for example, last year, Magic Maze was released, and I really, really liked the game. I thought it was very interesting. But I ultimately decided that it was a good game and not a great game, because while the mechanics were interesting, while it did something that no other game has really done, it also kind of wore off pretty fast. So it was interesting while it was new, and then after that novelty was gone, I wasn't really interested in playing it anymore.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And I'm picking production quality as kind of just my threshold. There has to meet a minimum threshold for me. But I think we're all in agreement that having some sort of unique quality, the way I would define it is a game has to be bold to be great, has to be willing to take a chance to do something new, to a lesser degree, tackle maybe an unknown or an underserved subject matter. That boldness quality that really just stands up and shouts to you that I need to be played. I'm a board game. That also is something that I consider that a great board game needs to have.
What's an example of a great bold board game?
For me, something I felt was pretty bold was Patch History. Patch History was a civilization building game, but instead of doing your traditional map or even something like Through the Ages or Nations, kind of making it a card-driven game, it tried to represent civilizations as a quilt. And throughout the game, you're building a quilt by putting patches of your civilization. And that's not an idea that you see every day. To me, that was a bold decision, a totally different direction to take a civ building game, and one that really worked for me.
I think that's a great example, and I would agree. Patch History is phenomenal in that respect. I remember the first time I played it. I played it on your recommendation, Alex, and I was just blown away by how unlike anything else it is. And I guess since then, Honshu has come out, and I guess Hanging Gardens came before that, the idea of patching cards together. But Patch History, combining it with a resource management civilization game, is quite a weird beast. Wolfie, something that you said was interesting to me. You said that one of the chief qualities you look for in a great board game is replayability. Could you talk about that a little more?
Yeah, sure.
Why is replayability so important?
I think we've mentioned already that there are a lot of good board games out now, and there's something like 5,000 board games coming out in 2018 or something. It's really, really high. And most of those games will probably be good, and a fair number will be terrible. And who knows how many will be truly great, but a great game is a game that you want to play again. And it's, I think, even beyond just like you can play again. If a game is really great, the moment you finish playing, you're going to be thinking about like, what am I going to do next time I play? What strategy would I like to try next time? Or like, what mistakes did I make this time that I think I can do better on next time? It kind of engages you. And that ties back to the first thing I said, which was memorable and immersive, which doesn't necessarily have to be thematic. I know I tend to skew towards the bigger thematic games over the more mechanical oriented Euro games, but either way, I think if a game has really interesting mechanics, I've never actually played Patch History, so I don't know, but it sounds like that game has a lot of opportunities for just approaching things in different ways and like, oh, what if I use these cards instead next time? Or can I build a winning strategy off of this card that no one likes? My favorite games, the games that I consider great, are the games that I can think about all the time outside of playing them. And it's beyond just some games try to simulate replayability by a variable setup, like, oh, well, the board is different every time, or you have different powers, and those things can help. But a really strong replayable game that just has interesting mechanics or something to draw you in again and again, I think, is something that helps elevate a game to being truly great.
I'm going to push back a little bit on that one there. I think if a game can provide you one incredible experience, then I would consider it something great. And I know that your love for the Pandemic Legacy series, do you consider those vastly replayable?
That's a fair question. The one thing I would say about that is Pandemic Legacy is inherently playable at least 12 times, which is more times than a lot of the games that have hit my shelf get played. Every time I play Pandemic Legacy, I'm eager to go back again. I think even though it is technically used up, and I don't intend on playing either season of Pandemic Legacy again, season two was close. We almost wanted to play season two again. You know, I look forward to the next season of Pandemic Legacy and seeing what they do there. So I don't know if that counts as a different game or not, but I see Pandemic Legacy as being replayable at least a dozen times. I think we played 14 times, maybe 15 times.
Okay, no, I think that's fair. But I do think we are seeing a subtle trend towards more one-off experiences, more disposable experiences, you could say, stuff like the Exit series, those escape room in a box type things. And now that more board games are trying to incorporate narrative elements into them, they're a lot less replayable because the narrative has already been played out. And I don't think I would dismiss them right off the bat just because I've already experienced it and don't really want to again. There's certainly experiences that I've had with games, even though I might never play them in the future, I still hold on to them and I know that I had a great time with it and I would still consider it a great one.
I would point to the Exit series, as you mentioned, as a great example of a game that is phenomenal and you can't really play it again because as you're playing it, you cut things up. My wife and I have played through all of the Exit boxes that are out, I think, except for the Forbidden Castle. And each time we hold off on doing them, even though we have them stored in our closet, just because we know that once we do them, it's going to be over and we want to savor them as long as possible. So there is something to that. I agree that I don't think replayability is always a mark of a great game. But I'm kind of with Wolfie that most games that I consider great are games that I want to play again and again. The Exits and games like that are more of an anomaly.
Even I would argue, though, that even Exit is somewhat replayable and that if there was just one Exit game, it would be like, oh, that was fun. But I wouldn't consider that like great. I'd be like, oh, that was fun. But the fact that there's another Exit that you can do and you can anticipate that and you know what it's like and you're like eager to try new puzzles again. It's that same sense of, this was a really interesting experience and I love doing it again and again, even though you're not having the exact same puzzles or the exact same narrative or whatever. It's still replayable in the sense that the mechanics draw you in, the stories draw you in, and you want to play again. So it's kind of, as a series, it's replayable.
Now, we are talking as reviewers, and so part of the job of the reviewer is to see lots of new games. And so we're naturally drawn to new games. And so I know I at least don't get to replay games as much as I want. That's why I started a game night on Thursday night where we pretty much only play a select group of games and we try to play them more and more. So we get a decent number of plays on those. How important do you think replayability is to the broader board game audience?
To my family, it's extremely important. They are not hobby gamers. My family would prefer to play the same three games over and over again. Although I would guess that what they would consider a replayable game may not be the same as you or I, where a simpler game that doesn't have a lot of depth could still be replayable to them just because they have a harder time remembering a lot of rules or learning new games. So every time they play Ticket to Ride, it's like a new experience for them. Mm-hmm. So there are some games where even for them, it's like, okay, we played it. I don't really want to play that again. So it's not something that's drawing them back again and again.
Sure. I think what the distinction between your family and yourself, your family is willing to replay something because they're familiar with it, whereas you're looking to replay something to plumb its depths, to explore different tactics, to see what else can be given by that board game to you.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I tend to agree with Wolfie that replayability is what makes a game great. Although, again, aside from the anomalies, I don't know that I would agree that Exit wouldn't be great if there were just one of them. What do you think it is that makes a game replayable?
I think there are different things, and it's not the same for every game. I think that some games give you a lot of different options you can choose to pursue. And so there are many ways to approach the strategy of the game to score points and win. And the different ways you can approach the game and win provide learning opportunities, provide exploration. So that's kind of on the input end. Some games, the mechanics are more simple and there's kind of one or two actions you do in the game, but the output is different. You can apply those actions in different directions and get different outcomes. And so that can provide depths to explore. I think that asymmetrical abilities provide replayability. If you have a unique power, as long as the powers are balanced, as long as all the powers have some level of fun to play with, that can provide some replayability. Some games, like narrative games, have different stories that you can play. Mansions of Madness comes to mind, where there's different scenarios you can play through and get a different experience every time. And then maybe just like the challenge of trying to accomplish something that's very difficult. And so you can play again and again until you can overcome that challenge. And then maybe there's another challenge after that. So I think there are a lot of ways that you can get replay value out of a game.
I think for me, the thing that makes me want to keep coming back to a game is when I can't do everything I wanted to do the one time. You know, we talk about interesting decisions in games. And I think what makes a decision interesting is the trade-off in it. If you decide one thing, you're not deciding on the other. And for example, this week I played Heaven and Hell for the first time by Michael Kiesling. And the whole time you're thinking, I don't have enough money to do this. You have to decide whether to put a tile on the sunny side of your garden or the shady side of your garden. And so you have to choose between whether it's going to give you points to help you win the game or whether it's going to give you money to help buy you other tiles. And the whole game, you're pulled in multiple different directions. And this was the first time my gaming group, immediately after playing a game at game night, said, let's play it again. And to me, I think it's those tension points. I read a lot of books. And so for me, the narrative isn't as important. I go to other media for narratives. The thing that's most important to me in a game, the thing that engages me the most and makes me want to keep coming back to it, are those tense decision points where I know that I chose this path. Next game, maybe I'll choose a different path and see how it works out.
You're an explorer.
I am.
Yeah, that's interesting. My initial pushback kind of shows where I stand on this subject, where I'm not too huge on replayability. If a game has a static setup, no big deal to me. It really just comes down whether I'm having a good time or not is whether or not I'm willing to replay a game. The game can have set strategies that everyone is aware of. And as long as we're having a good time, I'll play it again.
Have you ever played a game that you had a great time with and then the next time you played it was like, oh, this wasn't fun again?
Yes, but that's mostly due to the people that I play with, that I played with, don't play anymore.
That's unfortunate. To play board games, you kind of need the other people there, I guess with the exception of the solitaire stuff.
Then when I play a solo game, then I have to play with myself, and I can't really stand myself.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Okay, we were all thinking it.
Alex, I want to go back to something that you said earlier. You said that production quality isn't everything, but you expect kind of a minimum level of production in order to be a great game. What's the worst production of a great game? Just so we have some kind of standard.
An infamous traffic from Hollenspiel. They're an incredibly small publishing house. I believe they print on demand. It came in a sticker wrapped box that was not aligned correctly. The rule book did not fit in the box. I had to physically cut it down. Came with paper maps, which is something that I am really not down with anymore. I would have been in the past, but, you know, stick some cardboard on there, put some glue and stick it on some cardboard, which is what I actually ended up doing. But it's a cool game. It's very, very very interesting, credible subject matter, just something that I've never seen executed before. Every time I look at that box, I'm sorely disappointed in what could have been.
Maybe a deluxe version will be kickstarted.
I would hope so. You know, they offer print and play files, and I think I easily could have made a better quality on my own.
Wolfie, what would you say is the worst production of a great game?
Mine is probably Dominion, just because the game is all cards, and the cards are okay, but the art is so hit and miss, and looks like a lot of it just looks weird. And if you're looking at the cards, it does not say, like, that game does not scream, play me, play me. But I think it's a great game. That's one of the most replayed games in my household.
Who publishes that again?
Rio Grande Games.
Of course it is.
I had to think if it was bought out by Asmodee for a second, but no, not that one. Not yet.
Not yet. I'm a big fan of Carl Chudik's games, and
yes,
two of them I would consider great, and also two of them I would consider to have pretty poor productions. At least the original edition of Glory to Rome, the 1.5 edition from Cambridge Games Factory, was in a clamshell box. The cards are these thick. They're just, you know, you know that cards are cardboard, but these are like big, thick pieces of cardboard. And there's a point where thickness is not a good thing. And Glory to Rome definitely reaches that point. And Innovation, published by Asmati Games, I love that game, but it just, it's okay. I put up with it just because if it were too busy, it would be hard to follow. And all of the expansions are only available in the Asmati version. There was a yellow version that had better looking cards, but they only released Echoes of the Past, which truthfully, I don't think you need anything beyond the base game. But what would you say recently is a game that just missed the great cut for you? What's a game that you were looking at and you said, this is good, but it isn't great? And why didn't it make the cut?
I'll say one that I don't know if it would have been a great game if the glaring problems had been fixed, but I thought it was going to be a very solid game with a lot of interesting choices. And that game is Alien Artifacts. And it's one of those games where you just do one thing at a time and you have to manage your resources and you can pursue completely different paths. And a lot, like every card has two ways to play it. And just, you have a lot of choices and a lot of cool things you can do and a lot of strategies you can pursue, but it has a deck of cards that are very powerful, which is part of the game, and that's fine. But one of these very powerful cards is sort of a game breaker. It gives you three extra turns after the game is over. And for a game that's about efficiency and trying to create an engine to score a bunch of points really quickly. John, you were talking earlier about how you like games where you can't do everything you want to do. And a lot of games, mm-hmm. you get to the point where you're just like almost there, and then the game ends like right at the climax, which is great because it's really tense and you're like, hey, am I going to be able to pull this off at the last second? And then it's like that, mm-hmm. and then you get three extra turns. So you get to the point where you're like, I'm not sure if I scored enough, and then you get three extra turns. So it kind of breaks the game. Whoever gets that card is almost guaranteed to win by 20 points if you play it accurately and well. So there may have been other problems with the game, but that one sort of like ruined the whole experience.
That one sounds like it didn't just miss the cut. That sounds like a pretty big issue.
I'm gonna try the game without that card and see how well it does. But because the overall game is like, it's enjoyable. It's an interesting game. There are a lot of choices. You can play it differently. But then when there's one card that's so much powerful than everything else you could possibly do, that ruins any alternative strategies. You just try and get that card.
I've already mentioned Magic Maze, which I really enjoyed. And I, if someone asked to play it, I would still play it now. I think that as you play it with a group, you get better and it gets less interesting as you get better at the game. The whole premise of the game is this silly thing, and it's fun when you can't do it. But as you get better, you can do it, and then the gimmick wears off. I mentioned that one already. I think recently a game, in fact, this is the one that sparked the idea of what separates a good game from a great game for me, was a game just released from Renegade Games called Byzance. And it's this card game. It's very clever. I just posted a review on IslayTheDragon.com. It's a game that I should love. It's a game I should want to return to. It's very clever. It has all the things that I value. I guess the trade-offs in it aren't super tense. I guess that's the thing that keeps it from being great. But after I'm finished, I think, huh, that was interesting, and I don't really feel compelled to return to it. It's a game that I don't really want to give it a low score because it's a good game. It's very solid. I think people who like that sort of thing will enjoy it. I even enjoyed it mostly. It's just at the end of the day, I'm thinking, I don't know that I would play that over a game like For Sale or a game even that I reviewed recently, Felicity, the Cat in the Sack, another kind of auction filler game that just has a lot more personality, a lot more character to it. That to me is a game recently that I thought I should like this more than I do, but I don't.
It can't be great because it's ugly. So.
Yeah, it definitely, according to me, fills your criteria.
Exactly. I think a game for me that just misses the mark is Clans of Caledonia. A big part of what makes a game great to me is, and I didn't mention it until now, is personality. A game should either have the personality of the designer shine through or allow for the player's personalities to shine through. And to me, Clans of Caledonia is an amalgamation of many other games, namely Terra Mystica, amongst others. And it kind of shaves away some of the things that made Terra Mystica interesting. It shaves away some of the edges, makes it a more smoother, more palatable game to the masses. And in doing so, it loses the personality of a game like Terra Mystica. It misses those edges, those things that you can latch onto, that crunchiness that still makes it an enjoyable and fun time, and I'll still play it and I like it, but it's not something that I would classify as great.
This is the time, Alex, where we have hashtag confess your unpopular opinion, because that seems to be going against the conventional wisdom on Clans of Caledonia.
Yeah, but then another new game will come out a couple months and people will forget all about it, and I'll come out on the right side of history, so it's fine.
I remember when Quadropolis came out from Days of Wonder, and it was getting fantastic reviews. And I played it and I'm thinking, this is going to be forgotten in a month. And I tweeted something about that at the time. And people were like, no, I'm going to be playing this for years. And then sure enough, in 3 months, I was like, so where's everyone playing Quadropolis? And it seems to have fallen off the map.
I had to look that up just right now to even remember what that was.
That's the thing. One of the things that Level 99, David Talton, talked about in his article, which we'll link in the show notes, but he talks about how his studio is trying to produce fewer games, but more memorable games. And that seems to be the Days of Wonder strategy. And everyone points to Days of Wonder as a company that does that. But when I look at Days of Wonder's games, there are very few to me that are memorable. One of them, obviously, is Ticket to Ride. I think Ticket to Ride is a great game. And more than just, you know, people talk about it as, oh, it's a gateway to get people into the hobby. No, I still love playing Ticket to Ride. As long as the group is right, I'm willing to play it with beginners and play it kind of laid back. I'm willing to play it with more hobbyist opponents who want to play more cutthroat. I think it's a great game that works at a lot of levels. And I think Five Tribes, I know Wolfie would disagree with me on this one, but Five Tribes is the other game that I would say from Days of Wonder is great. But in between those, I'm coming
like
up kind of blank.
World. I think Small World is pretty great. I know you don't care as much for Small World, but
certainly a game.
This game. Alex, do you even like any games? I'm curious. What's the game you like?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times I wonder why do I bother?
You are kind of the Sour Patch.
I'll gladly wear that mantle.
So, okay, we're coming on the end here. What is a game from the last, let's say, year or two that you would consider great? Was there anything released that was great?
The one that immediately comes to mind is Three Kingdoms Redux First of all, it's gorgeous. It has some amazing illustrations. More than that, it's bold. It's a three-player only game. It's asymmetrical. It simulates the warring factions of medieval China in a bidding game. Does a lot of interesting things, and the personality of the designers totally shines through with tons of unique powers. You can tell that the designers are fans of that, and it allows the players to play that they want to, either playing aggressively or building up their own economies. It allows the players to play according to their own personalities, and you know, it's just a really, really great game.
What about you, Wolfie? What would you say is an example of a great game that came out recently?
I don't know if this is cheating. If it's cheating, I'll pick
another
one.
Are you going to say Twilight Imperium?
I was going to say Twilight Imperium. Fourth edition.
That does not count.
It's fourth edition, man. The game is so great that it's lasted for like 20 years. That's the mark of a true great game.
And it's so great that it's had to be recreated four times.
Yes. Monopoly's been around for a while.
Hold on though. I do want to talk about it for a second though, because one of the things I wanted to say, which I wrote down in my pre-show notes to talk about, is that something I don't think is necessarily required for a game to be great is like perfectly streamlined mechanisms. I would rather play a game that's as big and bloated and crazy as Twilight Imperium 3rd edition, which is, it has this really interesting, unique hook or bold design like mechanism at the core of it. But then there's like a ton of stuff around the outer edges that's just messy and complicated and creates all these weird situations that people will argue on forums for hours about. But to me, it's still a great game because it's memorable. You can try different strategies, play as different races. Every game creates this crazy story. It lets your personality shine through. It's bold. You know, not many board games force you to stick it out for 6 or 7 hours. But a game like that has so much personality, has so much uniqueness to it that I would rather play that than like a perfectly streamlined game with clean mechanisms that's just okay. Like that was fine. So
it's finally something that I can agree with you on.
Mechanisms are important, and I think streamlined mechanisms are good for family games, for getting new people into the hobby, but sometimes to make a truly great game, you just have to accept some level of clunkiness and you just have to accept a learning curve, and that's fine. It's okay to have a learning curve.
I played Brass for the first time last year, and that definitely falls into that category of lots of rough edges, but lots of personality. And I'm usually the kind of person who does value streamlined mechanisms. And Brass, I was trying to fit it in a streamlined box. It isn't at all. but it's one of those games that even I find compelling, even though it is. Usually I would look at a rule book like that and say, this is a mess, but it works.
Right. It's the difference between eating Jell-O, which is for the masses, it's smooth and it just slides down your throat. And it's disgusting, and something with a bit of texture that sticks in your teeth that the flavor will linger with you. And I think that's the difference between a great game and Jell-O.
But how do you feel about mango Jell-O, Alex?
How dare you put those two words together?
I already mentioned Heaven and Ale as a game. I'm not sure that it's great. We played it twice in a row, and I really enjoyed it, but I do value replayability in games, and so I'm excited to see how it ages over the long haul, whether it maintains its aura of greatness, I suppose. I think you guys have both pointed to games that are heavy, and I'm going to point to a great game that is light, and that game for me is Werewords. Or Insider. I think both are great. I think they're both great in different ways. I think Werewords is definitely the game of the two that I'm going to end up keeping, but I don't think it would have gotten where it was without Insider. Both Werewords and Insider, they take a very old and simple game, 20 questions, and they make it completely new by adding in a traitor element. So the idea is there's a secret word and someone knows who that word is, and they're trying to lead the group either to guess it or not guess it. And this has gone over well in just about every group that I brought it to. It's consistently fun to play. There are new experiences. There's always laughter. In a game that I played on Friday, someone said, "You're either the werewolf or you're just clueless." And it turns out I was clueless.
Surprise.
There was someone who someone chose the word Conan the Barbarian as the term when he was the mayor, and he didn't know who Conan the Barbarian was. And it's just like it creates all of these memorable situations that even though a game is quick, crisp, it lasts a cool 5 minutes, it still produces a lot of memories, and I just love it to pieces. So Werewords for me, I think, is a game that I would say is great that was released in the last
year. I can agree with that. That's a great game.
So we have definitively defined what a great game is, I believe.
I think we have. I think we've nailed it. So
it's my three, right? It's the ones I wrote.
Yeah.
Sure. You're the boss.
All I know is I'm not fully on board with the production quality thing. I play too many good, great, poor productions to let that one slide for me.
I'm just sitting here crying.
That's what it sounded like.
I've also played so many great productions that are just average games.
Yeah.
The production tries to make up for the lack of personality in the game itself.
Then again, I mean, I don't think Splendor would be anywhere near as popular as it is without the production it got.
And I think Splendor is boring.
I think Splendor is one of those games that's on the cusp for me. I'm not sure if it's great or not, because every time I play it, I'm compelled to keep playing, and I'm compelled to play it multiple times in a row. But I really don't know why.
It's like smoking.
That bears mentioning that what makes a game great is extremely subjective. And I think Twilight Imperium is great. Clearly you two do not. I think Star Wars Rebellion is great. I think Cosmic Encounter is great. And I know you don't think that one's great.
You're right, I don't.
You think like Ra is great. And I'm not so much. So, but, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, I think this game is great. You know what? You're right. If you think a game is great and you like playing it again and again and again, you do you. You play the game that you love, because that's fine. Like, there's so many games, and if you like a different game than me, you may be wrong, but I may be crazy.
On that vaguely inspirational note, I think that's a good place to end. Thank you so much to Alex and Wolfie for discussing with us tonight what makes a game great instead of just merely good. Again, this has been the Breathing Flames podcast from islaythedragon.com. You can visit our website. We're also on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and you can follow us in all those places. If you want to discuss anything that happened in this podcast, if you want to tell us we're wrong, we have a Board Game Geek Guild that you can be part of. And we just want to say thank you for listening. And keep slaying dragons. I don't know. Thank you for listening. We're very pleased that you listen.
You're welcome.
Alex is our listener. Yes, we've got one.